So we talked about fear somewhat last week. That's what I remember anyway, because the communion meditation kind of went with that perfectly. Does this sound loud? I'm hearing myself a lot. I think I'm hearing it through the monitor, which is hearing myself is disconcerting. Is this what you guys hear every week? Wow. I'm very sorry. Okay, that's enough. That's enough. You don't have to run with it. It was just a simple question. Okay. This morning we're going to be looking at a text from Exodus chapter 14. So last week we talked about Moses and his excuses not to do what God had asked him to do. And so we now have completed the 10 plagues. We've completed the Passover. We have kind of escaped, sort of, Egypt. And now the Israelites are camped at the Red Sea. And we are picking up here where Pharaoh has now had his heart hardened again. He has grabbed his army and he is chasing after Israel. And we're going to pick up there this morning. In verse 10 it says, as Pharaoh drew near, the sons of Israel looked, and behold, the Egyptians were marching after them, and they became very frightened. So the sons of Israel cried out to the Lord. Then they said to Moses, is it because there were no graves in Egypt that you have taken us away to die in the wilderness? Why have you dealt with us in this way, bringing us out of Egypt? Now, one of the things that's really fascinating about this story, and it's always fun when we kind of look back and apply these things to other people as opposed to applying them to ourselves. Take a minute and imagine what the Israelites have seen, and we don't know the exact time frame of the 10 plagues. Based on how long COVID's lasted, probably 3 years. That's what I'm assuming it would take to do actual 10 plagues and not just one. So you've got the 10 plagues, and the children of Israel have been watching all this happen, okay? So they have seen God turn the Nile River into blood. They have seen, and I'm not going to try to name all 10 of these plagues because I'll certainly miss one, but they've seen the frogs. They've seen the pestilence. They've seen the sky darken. I mean, they've seen all of it. They've witnessed God's wrath against the Egyptians. They have watched God take Egypt and force it into a place where not only have the Egyptians given them their freedom, but they gave them all their stuff. The children of Israel actually plundered Egypt and took a tremendous amount of wealth out of the country when they went. And the Egyptians were like, please take it. Just take our stuff and go. And so after seeing all those things, now they're camped at the Red Sea, and they see Pharaoh's army coming. And what immediately happens? What happens to them when they see Pharaoh's army coming? They get afraid. Okay? They get afraid. Now, how many of you have ever been through a season in your life where faith was easy? Wow, y'all are some hard-living people. It has been my experience that there have been periods in my life when faith was really easy. Everything was going relatively well. There were no major problems or catastrophes. You felt really close to God. Nothing. Everything was going right, and you'd be talking about your faith to people, and faith just was so easy because everything was going great. And then something happens, right? Something takes place. Some catastrophe, some work problem or family problem, some medical crisis or some financial issue, or maybe there's some global thing, something in the news, some thing with your country or whatever. There's some kind of whatever we'll call a crisis takes place. And immediately you now are put in a position where you have to see if your faith is great enough to withstand a crisis. Because with a crisis normally comes what? Fear. And fear is the great enemy of faith. Fear is always the great enemy of faith. All right? So you're the children of Israel, and you've seen all these things take place. You've witnessed the 10 plagues, and you have had God lead you out into this region. And now here comes Pharaoh's army. Now there's two ways you can approach this if you're the children of Israel. You can look at this and go, that guy, man, that guy's a sucker. He won't give up. How many times does God have to smack that guy down? I can't wait to see what he's going to do. Now, that's one approach you could take, right? Or you could take this approach. Moses, why did you bring us out here to die? Weren't there enough graves in Egypt? What have you done? We're going to die out here. God did all these things to bring us out here so he could kill us in the wilderness. Wah! And that's exactly what the children of Israel do. And I think most of us can probably relate. We actually have a biblical excuse. I'm always fascinated by this. Every time something happens, and I won't name names because that would be inappropriate, but I know those people that every time a crisis comes, they go to Revelation. This is it. This is the end time. We are in the end time. Here it is, right here. This is the end time. By the way, if you claim every crisis is the end time, sooner or later, you'll hit it right. Sooner or later, you're going to hit it right. It's like my baseball coach used to tell me. He said, Stuart, you can't hit. So swing hard. And I said, why? He said, because if you've accidentally hit the ball one time, you may hit a home run. If you're going to strike out, swing hard. Sooner or later, you may get lucky. And I think there was some reference to a blind squirrel. And by the way, he was wrong. I never hit a home run. I did hit the ball hard a few times, but usually it was foul. This is what happens. We go, okay, yeah. There's, you know what? God's not bringing us through this. This is the end. That's what this is. And that way, by the way, by claiming every crisis is the end time, you can be fearful and still claim faith because you're just quoting Scripture. It's a lovely way to get out of the dilemma. Oh, this is it. This is it. I was tickled because I had a friend who posted something about that, how COVID-19 was the end time. And I mockingly made a comment about the fact that if the bubonic plague wasn't the end time, and the Spanish flu epidemic of 1919 wasn't the end time, I don't think COVID-19 qualifies as the apocalypse. And they unfriended me. Which was very disappointing because I really enjoyed some of the paranoid posts. But this is what happens to us. When a crisis comes, we have to make a choice, right? We have to make a choice. We have to make a decision. Do we react to the crisis fearfully, or do we react to the crisis with faith? Now, when we see the children of Israel, and by the way, have you ever noticed how silly things look on other people? It's like when you do something and you're like, it seems perfectly normal, and then you see somebody else do it and you're like, wow, that looks kind of stupid. You know, things always look worse on other people. When we read this story, and I would assume most of you would do this, when you read this story and you see the way the children of Israel are acting, you know what we do? We go, oh, those poor people. How little faith do those people have? I mean, these people have seen God do all these things. These people have witnessed the 10 plagues. They've seen Moses throw his staff on the ground and it turned into a snake. I mean, they've seen him stick his staff out over the Nile and it turned to blood. They've seen all these things. And they're still afraid. What a bunch of suckers. But the question becomes, how many times have we done that? How many times when things go sideways do we immediately revert back to fear, right? Every time there's a challenge, every time there's a crisis, every time there's an obstacle. And it's funny because if you go, and this is one of Roxanne's favorite verses, John 16, 33. In this life, go ahead, Roxanne.
You will have trouble.
In this life, you will have trouble. That is a quote from Jesus at the Last Supper. In this life, you're going to have trouble. As long as you live in this world, there's going to be trouble. There's always going to be trouble. And every time you think you've gotten clear of one trouble, what happens? There's another one. And you're lucky if they only come one at a time. You know, you're doing pretty good if they only come one at a time. We literally move from crisis to crisis. One of the things I enjoyed in history is when I teach is like, if you go back historically, we see recessions and depressions in U.S. history about every 20 to 30 years. You can go back and mark them. The Panic of 1873, the Panic of 1893, there was a depression, a minor recession right before World War I, and then the Great Depression right before World War II, and they just come every 20 to 30 years. You can see them. And it's because you just get that little sine wave of ups and downs in the economy, and that's kind of like life. Stop it. No. We're not getting into economic theory today. I was just an example. But we understand this. Most of you can probably go back in your life and you can find those spiritual highs, those times of great joy when everything seemed to be going perfect. And you were at the top of the world, and ironically, you were at the top of your faith. And then a few years later, you're in this incredible valley where everything seems to be going wrong. And you sit there and go, why has God abandoned me? Why is he letting all this stuff happen to me? And so we understand how this works. And so the children of Israel have come to the edge of the Red Sea. And as Pharaoh's army is approaching, their immediate reaction is to give in to fear. Which I think all of us can understand. And we live in a time right now which is very fearful. As we look at all the unrest in our country, and we look at all of the issues with the COVID-19, and we look at all these things, and it creates a lot of anxiety. And we've talked the last several weeks about how many people have dealt with anxiety. And most of us are dealing with some level of anxiety as we deal with all these things. And we see that right now, if you look at the psychological journals, we are at a peak in depression. Depression numbers in the United States are up dramatically. And it's not surprising. It's not surprising. And so the issue becomes, as we deal with a crisis, we have to make a choice about whether or not we are going to give in to fear and begin to question God, or whether or not we're going to double down on our faith and say, okay, God, what are you going to do? What's going to happen? So these people, as they are addressing Moses, they're like, is it because there were no graves in Egypt that you've taken us away to die in the wilderness? Why have you dealt with us in this way, bringing us out of Egypt? Next verse, please. Is this not the word that we spoke to you in Egypt, saying, leave us alone that we may serve the Egyptians? For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness. Now, I want you to take a minute and gather the weight of that statement. From the time the children of Israel became oppressed by the Egyptians, what have they done?
Complain.
To who?
Moses.
No, not Moses. Moses wasn't with them when they were slaves. They've complained to God, right? They've called out to God to be delivered, right? They have hollered and hollered and hollered, deliver us, please deliver us from this. All right, so now what has God done? He's delivered. He's in the process of delivering them. And so they go out into the wilderness, and this is what they say to Moses. What did we tell you? Leave us alone so that we can serve the Egyptians. Well, no, wait a minute. I thought you were crying out to be delivered. And so when Moses shows up, they're like, leave us alone. Don't mess with us. Leave us alone. And then they say this. It had been better for us to stay slaves and serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness. Now, I want you to take a minute and think about that today. Imagine for a moment you were a slave. Imagine you were a slave and you had lived your life in slavery. And you had your entire life dreamed of one thing. Right? I just want to be free. What I would not give to be free. I always think of that line in Braveheart. Yeah. Thanks, Chuck. That was a very deep, husky voice there. He says, you know, when he's riding in front of the army, he tells him, he says, flee and you will live, fight and you may die. But on your deathbed, if you had an opportunity to come back to this moment and live for 1 second as free men. Oh, it's a great quote, which I just completely butchered. But it's a fantastic concept. Imagine if you were slaves and you had the opportunity to be free. But with that freedom comes what? Well, there's a price, right? There's a price to be free. Price and responsibility. I remember growing up in Crestville in my parents' house, and every time there was a rule that I didn't like, I would sit in my bedroom and go, I can't wait till I am on my own. That's going to be amazing. When I'm on my own, it's going to be awesome, and I'm going to be on my own, and I'm going to make my own rules. And then I got on my own one day. And you know what I found out about freedom? It's expensive. Freedom's expensive. Freedom costs a lot of money. I mean, it was like apartment rent and car payments. And I still remember the day my parents looked at me and said, by the way, this is your insurance premium. Enjoy it. And I remember going, what is this for? I said, well, it's in case you get in a wreck. I've never been in a wreck. I don't need this. Well, you got to have it. The state requires you to have it. You have to pay this. Well, I never paid this before. That's because we've been paying it. Enjoy. And I'm not going to lie to you. As a parent, I have had moments where I've sat in my recliner and dreamed of the moment I've handed Samantha her car insurance and went, my gift to you. No, not yet. No time soon. I'll get you out of college first, I'm sure. But, but it's coming. It's coming. Marry up, because it's coming. It's coming. You know, freedom is expensive. Freedom is trouble. There's a lot of hassle that comes with it. And so what the Israelites are finding out is now that they're free and immediately there are problems. Let me draw a really significant analogy for you about this story. Once upon a time, you were slaves. You were slaves to sin. And you know what Jesus Christ did? He died and he freed you. And from the moment that he freed you, what's been going on? Satan has been trying to get you back. Just like Pharaoh. Pharaoh lost his slaves, and what happened? As he came to his senses, like, I'm going to get them back. I'm getting my slaves back. Whatever it takes, I'm rounding up the army, and we're going to go get them. And from the moment Christ freed you from your sin, Satan has had one objective, to get you back. And you know the most effective way for Satan to get you back? Is to try to convince you to turn on the one who freed you and willingly return to him. And by the way, what does it sound like is happening in this verse? If given the option, does it sound to you like the children of Israel at the Red Sea would have turned around and gone back to Pharaoh and said, please take us back? It's exactly what it sounds like. We told you to leave us alone. We told you not to drag us out here. Now we're out here to die in the wilderness. We'd rather be slaves to the Egyptians. We would rather be enslaved than to die out here in the wilderness. You know what that is? That's fear talking. And that is the methodology that Satan has been using against God's people for 2,000 years. Since the day Christ set us free from Satan, Satan has been trying to get us to willfully go back to him. And why does he have to force us? Why does he have to try to convince us to willfully go back? Because that's the only way he can get us, right? Paul says, what can separate us from the love of God? I am convinced that neither height nor depth. You guys remember that verse? He goes through a long list of things. Nothing can separate us from the love of God except what? Except us. And so just as the children of Israel are out of the hands of the Egyptians, we are out of the hands of Satan. Unless we can be convinced to go back willfully. You guys remember the prodigal son? Couldn't wait to be free, right? Got his inheritance, went off and lived. I love, it's one of my favorite words in the Bible, riotous living. I don't know what that means. I don't know what kind of parties were going on where he was, but they must have been some good ones. He went and engaged in riotous living, blew all his money, and then what did he have to do? At some point, he said, it would be better for me to go home and be a slave to my father, because even his slaves eat better than what I'm doing. I'm eating with the pigs. I'm in the pig pen eating what the pigs eat. My father's slaves eat 10 times better than this. I'm going home. I'm going back. And so the children of Israel have reached this critical moment where they are sitting at the Red Sea and they see Pharaoh's army coming, and they now have to make a choice. They have to make a choice. We are free. Do we want to stay free? Are we willing to pay the price of our freedom? Or do we turn on those who have freed us and willfully walk back into slavery? And that is a decision that we face on a daily basis, right? As Satan comes at us 50 different ways, trying to get us to turn our back on the one who freed us so that we can walk willfully back into slavery to him. So as Moses is hearing all this, now, there's a tremendous amount of irony here. So all this is being said to Moses. And just a few years before, when God came to Moses and said, Moses, I want you to go to Pharaoh and get my people. Remember what we talked about this last Sunday? What did Moses say? Me? I'm not the right guy to do this. And remember, he gave all these excuses about why he couldn't do it. And we talked about the fact that Moses was afraid, that he didn't want to go back to Egypt because he had committed a crime there. He had fled his family. And now going back, he just didn't want to face them, and he was afraid. And so now, just a few years later, that man who had been so terrified that he had made all these excuses to God, now he's standing before the children of Israel. And listen to what he says. He says, "Do not fear." Moses has come a long way. Now, by the way, if Pharaoh's army gets there, who do you think is going to take the worst of what happens? Moses. Moses is the guy, right? Moses is the one who stretched out his staff and turned the Nile into blood. It's Moses who's done all this stuff. And by the way, Pharaoh's own firstborn son died in that last plague. Do you think there's a chance that Pharaoh wants Moses' head on a pike and blaming him for the death of his son? And so listen to Moses. Good old Moses. "Do not fear. Stand by and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians whom you have seen today, you will never see them again forever. The Lord will fight for you while you keep silent." Now, here's what's fantastic about this story. If you read the next several verses, you know what we find out? Moses didn't know what God was going to do. He still didn't know. When we read this, we're like, oh, Moses knew. He was going to part the Red Sea. They were going to walk through. Moses doesn't know that yet. Moses has no idea what the plan is. So why is he so confident? Because he knows there's a plan. I have adopted this mantra in the last 3 years. I tell it to people all the time. I know two things about God for certain. He has a plan, and he ain't telling me what it is. Those are the two things I know. He's got a plan. I don't know what it is. And he rarely bothers to tell me in advance. He doesn't let me know. Say, "Stuart, look, don't worry. Let me tell you what I'm going to do. It's going to be amazing." Nope, that's not how it works. This is what he tells me. "Sit back with everybody else and watch it happen, buddy. You're going to be amazed when you see what I'm fixing to do." What are you going to do? Just wait. Moses stands up in front of the people and he says, "Listen, guys, don't fear. There's no reason to fear. Stop being afraid. Don't be afraid. Stand by and see the salvation of the Lord. I'm going to see it with you. It's going to be amazing. He's going to accomplish this for us today. And these Egyptians, you don't have to worry about them anymore." And you can almost imagine maybe Joshua standing beside Moses. "Hey, what's he going to do? Shh, I don't know." "Well, how do you know he's going to? Shh, he's got this. Don't worry about it." Now, why is Moses so sure God's going to do something? Well, it's faith. It's faith. Moses is probably rationalizing this in his head, going, "Okay, wait a minute. There's no scenario where God sends me to Egypt, does 10 plagues so that he can get his people out of Egypt and then bring them here so he can kill them. That makes sense at all. There's no way that's what's going to happen. God totally has this figured out. He has always been one step ahead. He's always a step ahead of Pharaoh. He's always a step ahead of me. God wouldn't have brought us here if he didn't have a plan. I ain't worrying about it." Now, let me ask you a question. How many of you remember that song, "He's Got the Whole World in His Hands"? You guys remember that song? Any of you ever remember singing that song? Now, here's the question. Do you remember believing that song? Some of you are going, well, I believed it when I was a kid. I don't know. How many of you believe that God still has the whole world in his hands? Well, about half of you. So, all right. So, my next question is to those who still believe that. What are you so worried about then? What are you so worried about? Oh, Stuart, there are riots. Stuart, there's all this unrest. There's COVID-19. We say that like God doesn't know any of that's happening. Like he is totally unaware of it, totally oblivious to it. You know, there was a philosopher back in the 19th century who came to this incredible conclusion. And his conclusion was this, that once upon a time there was God. God created everything and then God died. Any of you know who that was? Nietzsche. Friedrich Nietzsche. He came to the conclusion that there was a God once and that God, I guess, got old and died. And now the world was just kind of running on its own. And that's kind of how we act sometimes. We act like God doesn't know any of the stuff that's going on. Like he's on vacation. He's at the Outer Banks hanging out, you know, and he's totally unaware of what's going on in all these cities. And he's unaware of the COVID and he's unaware of all that stuff. And, you know, it's just, man, we don't know what's going to happen. The whole thing's coming unglued. And you reckon somewhere God is like, what in our history together makes you think I don't have this? I've been there through every crisis. I've been there through every dilemma. I've been there through every problem. By now, you would think that the things I've done in your life, just individually in your life, the things that I've done, you'd think by now, you'd know I got this. But that's not how we act. We want to know the plan. The second half of your favorite verse? I have overcome the world. How'd you do it? Don't worry about it. I will sit and I will watch TV shows with my wife sometimes, and I can tell this because she's out of town. And if she's watching online, I got a few more hours to live. But we'll be sitting there watching TV, and it'll be like we'll watch a show that we've seen before, but she can't remember it. That's the fantastic thing about, you know, she'll watch a TV show and in a day, she doesn't remember how it ended. So we'll be watching it, and then she'll look at me and she'll say, "Now, what's getting ready to happen?" And I'm like, and I know that if I tell her, she'll get mad at me. But I can't let it go because I'm a husband. And so I'll look at her and I'll go, do you really want me to tell you what's going to happen? And then she'll say no. And then I'll say something stupid, then like, why'd you ask? And I'm on the couch. So, you know, there is that thing. We want to know. And so we're looking at the world and we're like, how's God going to fix this? What's he going to do? What's he going to do with the Rona? What's he going to do? What's he going to do with all the unrest? What's he going to do? And the truth is, he's going to do something amazing. he's going to do something amazing. We had a thing at camp a few weeks ago. I'm just so excited. Even though I don't know how this is going to end, it doesn't really matter. Chris Avery came in. We were sitting there one night talking, and he said, "Stuart, I've been looking at our numbers." He said, "You know, food costs have gone up this summer. Our registrations obviously are down because of the COVID-19, and we had to cancel a few weeks." He says, "Right now, the camp looks like we're probably going to lose $20,000 this summer." Now, we're not like a billion-dollar camp, so that's a lot of money for us because I'm on the board, and he's like, "I don't know, man, we're probably going to lose $20,000, which really hurts the budget. So the next day, we get 45 minutes of rest time before the kids go to class. And so I'm laying in the dean's quarters. I'm chilling. I got the air conditioner blowing on me and the fan blowing on me. and I'm still sweating, but it feels better than being outside. And I'm laying there, and Chris busts up in my room, and he goes, "Guess what?" I said, "I don't know, man. What happened?" He said, "We just got a call from the Marines." I said, "What did you do?" He said, no, they're supposed to do this deployment thing, and it's supposed to be in another state, and they may not be able to go because of the coronavirus, and they want to come down and look at our facility. They may want to rent the camp for a month." Now, it would probably be inappropriate for me to give specific details, especially online, so I'll just say this. If this happens, and we're supposed to find out this week if they're going to come to the camp or not, it would more than take care of all the money that we lost. And there's just some times where you just look at God and go, "That's pretty cool. I didn't see that one coming. I never saw you using the military to fix this problem." You know, and it's just sometimes God wants to do some crazy stuff, and we're just like, "What's he going to do? What are we going to do? What are we going to do?" And we worry and worry and worry. And God's like, "Why are you so worried? I've been here through everything. Why do you think I don't have this? When did you stop believing I have the whole world in my hands? When did that stop? I got this. I'll take care of it." And so Moses stands before these people. He says, "Guys, look. I don't even know what he's going to do, but God's going to do something amazing. You just got to have faith and wait to see it happen." I wish I could stand here today, and I wish that I could tell you how all this craziness that we're living through right now is going to end. And I can't. I don't know what's going to happen with COVID-19. I don't know if there's going to be football this season. I don't know how long we're going to have to wear masks in public. I don't know how long before they have a vaccine. I don't know any of that stuff. I don't know what's going to happen with all the unrest. I don't know if it's going to escalate and get worse before it gets better. I don't know any of that stuff. But I know this. The creator of the universe has got it. And I don't know what he's going to do. I don't know how he's going to handle it. I don't know how he's going to work this thing out. But I know he will. And I know I don't have to know. And so in these moments of anxiety and uncertainty, we have to make a choice. And we're going to close with this morning as we get ready to go into our time of communion. Hint, hint. I told the praise team, when I say time of communion, and they go look at me and go, "Is he talking to us?" I want to close with this thought for you this morning. As you face the challenges of this present difficulty, you will have to make a choice. You will have to choose between faith and between fear. We all must make that choice. I want to tell you that you've got a Bible full of examples of what happens when people choose faith over fear. God is always there. He is always in control. And if we trust him, he will do some amazing things in our presence.